You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Jason Biani. Jason, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Jason, I know you're going to read to us today some poetry, but let's talk a little bit about what you're working on now, because you're doing a number of things, right? Working as artistic director as well as writer and organizer?
Yes. Yeah. I am the artistic director of Curtis Youth Workshop, which is the oldest multidisciplinary Asian American arts organization in the country, started in San Francisco in 1972. And, you know, we're still going to this day. We're a small organization, but, you know, we're still trying to, you know, kind of create spaces and opportunities for artists in the Bay Area.
And you're also working on your own projects, your own writing at the moment?
Well, the thing that kind of happened was that, my last book, which was part of a bigger project, was really kind of extensive for me. And, you know, the book stuff came about from me taking scraps from an abandoned manuscript and turning it into a stage show. I took 13 poems from the previous manuscript, created, you know, some bit of storytelling to go with it, you know, music, and just kind of created this solo theater show, which then I turned, you know, I was able to use that to be able to kind of build the newest manuscript and the one that, you know, my new book that was just released. You know, I was able to use that to build that. And so it's kind of like the two.
So it's able to build. So the one man, the solo show is what kind of gave birth to Locust, that book?
Yes. Yeah. Pretty much. Which, you know, was built from an abandoned manuscript, you know, which I was having trouble doing after the first book I published. I was just having trouble putting something together. It just never really came together. Then I did the show, and then I was able to come back to the book. So it was really kind of cool. And, you know, doing that, it was such a huge project, and I had still been doing the show for the last couple of years. So I think after I finished the manuscript for Locust, I was kind of like, I don't think I want to write for a while. And, you know, I've slowly been trying to get back into it. But the thing is that, you know, I mean, with everything happened with, you know, the pandemic and now the uprising, like, it's really forcing me to have to question, you know, where, you know, all these things, all these ideas I had about where I wanted to go with my work and in what direction, a lot of that is, you know, I'm forced to have to rethink and question, like, what is my place now? What do I want to contribute? What is necessary for me to contribute in this moment? And sometimes there's part of me that wonders, like, is my voice needed? And if so, what way? You know, I don't know. I'm having to really think about these things a lot now. And, you know, because in the meantime, there's still work I have to do as an organizer. There's still work, you know, trying to figure out how to best show up for my community and to show up, like, in the ways that I need it. And, you know, it's a lot to think about.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because, of course, it is June 8th right now, right? We're not only in the peak pandemic, but also the, you know, protests across the country and the world. So as you're saying, you know, that's also changing how you're thinking of your writing itself and what it's contributing to the world or what its place is. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, because the thing is that, like, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean, like, I wasn't on, you know, the path I should be on as an artist, but these things have to be considered, you know, and how does that, we're in new territory, you know.
And so what do you think so far? Is it premature to ask you? So what do you think now? Because this is a question that I think whether you're a writer or not, or an artist or not, or thinking about, which is what you said so articulately before, something like, you know, is my voice needed now and in what form?
Mm-hmm.
So what are the answers to those questions? Have you found any of them for yourself? Is your voice needed and in what form?
No, I haven't. And I think this is going to continue to be, you know, a process. I think there are immediate needs right now that I think I need to fill. But like this question about how my art should function, that's, I think, giving myself the space to work through that. I think that doesn't mean I don't start writing poems again or I don't do some type of work. You know what I mean? But I think that, you know, I mean, even so much about how our society is structured is come into question now. Because the thing is that, like, you know, part of me initially deciding not to write was this idea around, like, was me thinking around, like, what does it mean for me, you know, to produce and produce in the manner, am I producing just to have content? Am I producing just to continue to make sure that, like, I have readings and gigs and things like that, which, you know, I'm heavily dependent on for secondary income. But now, like, you know, with the pandemic, a lot of that has, you know, really forced me to say, like, I can't depend on like gigs and readings to be secondary income for me. So I have to think about other things, you know? So, you know, it's challenging. And, you know, I don't want to think about this in terms of difficulty, but it is a challenge, you know, because the thing is that, like, I don't think I'm alone in this, you know. At the end of the day, I just want to do something that's good and right, you know, in this world, and, you know, support and show up and you know, show love to the people I need to, you know. And it's just kind of, yeah, it's a really kind of, you know, profound place to be in, you know, at the moment. And, it is. Yeah.
So tell me about what you're going to read. And I'm glad you shared all that, because it is a powerful place to be in. And, you know, as I do these interviews, I'm talking to people in this moment of history that's affecting artists and writers and curators in all kinds of ways. I'm glad you shared that. It is something that no one has an answer to, I think. It's a problem we're working with, though. So tell me about the first poem you're going to read. What is this from?
This poem is from my newest book, Locus. It's called How Do You Love a Gentrified City? So, still you wait for the city to hold you with a merciful hand. But didn't you know a city is just like any god, distant and aloof? How can you be made so small and expect to write the Filipino story big inside of this place? And you say there is a pinhole, and inside, a mountain. Watch me now, you say. Watch me fit it all onto the wall of my son. Maybe tomorrow, they'll throw tear gas into the street and we will teach them how to grieve properly. You keep coming back. You're always told there isn't a place, but you say there will be one. And you say, this is the city where I found myself. Where I've been punched in the face, where I've been punched in the face again, where I was kicked once in the face, where I fall in love all of the time. Could a home just be the place where all your best stories live, the ones that get told over good food or whiskey in a loud bar, where do we belong to more than memory? A home that holds no capital. The story of us told in 15 words. We're still here. The heart is both metaphor and material. This has kept us alive.
Thank you, Jason. Beautiful poem, and seems so appropriate to the moment and our conversation just preceding the poem, too. Doesn't it, in some way, that same kind of searching and also, you know, it's hard not to read. You know, it's interesting what happens with poems, right? It's hard not to see that in the whole context that we're in right now.
It's kind of weird because, like, I haven't been reading this piece over the last year or two. I haven't really been thinking about much, but it's been in the book, and, you know, I just kind of started feeling pulled back to it again. And, I can't really explain why I didn't before or why I just kind of ignored it. But lately, I've been thinking about it a lot more.
So, what is the next poem you're going to read?
I have written a little bit of new stuff. So I thought maybe I can try out a little something newer. Yeah,
and when is this from? Yeah, tell me a little bit about it, and yeah, please read it. I'd love to hear something new as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's new, but it's also like some, you know, you have some of those poems that just like are scraps, you know, like here and there that you like you wrote out and then you abandoned and then you wrote out a little bit more and it just kind of sits there, this kind of mass of words, and then like, you know, lately, like I think at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, I returned to it and just kind of started playing a little bit more. It's called The Quiet Room. When the world comes to a still, it is a barely noticeable microsecond. What people say is, it felt as if my heart stopped. And that is an appropriate metaphor. The life of you stops for a moment. This is the silent cut, a gentle wounding that happens over and over again. When something explodes wherever you are is in the vicinity. If you are not dead, you were for a sliver of time. This is enough to change everything. Somewhere else, there's someone saying, this is happening somewhere else. So we've become so accustomed to busy street or busy sky. The true quiet is a disruption. Imagine a city in utter silence. Imagine what a sound becomes inside of it. You are not complicit in your own destruction. It is fed to you in a room with no mirrors, a quiet room where you can't even hear the sound of your own breath. These things, they move through time, and we act as if nothing can be done but to ask the next generation to save us from ourselves. I do not know what it looks like when we win, but I'm trying to ask the question. Somewhere inside all this noise is a proper quiet. I know this. I can't stop hearing it. It shakes all the comfort out of me.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
So that's a beautiful poem, and you know, also sounds like something I can relate to at this moment in time again. And not to try to put everything in this context, I wasn't thinking that, but after reading the first one and then this one, it's hard not to see them in this context. I mean, I don't know if that's the case with almost all art being made now, but I'm noticing that even with books that I'm reading that I think, oh, this was written before the pandemic, of course. You know what I mean? This was written before the riots, of course. It's like, it's like the way things were before 9/11 or after. I don't know. Do you think that's true, or am I stretching that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, I think some things can feel like premonition, but I think some ways that we, things that we observe in the world, you know, I think there are things that are already telling you world's bringing a destruction, or that, like, you know, I don't know, you know, it's just, I mean, I want to avoid, like, putting in terms of premonition, but I think there's a lot.
Not necessarily in the terms of premonition, but that there's suddenly, yeah, all these things, all these stories, artworks, have a slightly different story to tell. In a sense.
Yeah.
So you're going to read one more poem. Is that correct? What's the last one you're reading?
Yeah. So this is the final poem in my book. I think that writing, a lot of my writing has dealt with grief. I think because part of my discovery of my culture and my awareness of my identity as a Filipino comes from me coming to terms with my depression, and having lived with that for years and trying to understand how this is, you know, asking the question, why do I feel these things? And tying it to history and understanding what my history was, what the history was of my family, what the history is of my people. And I wrote this piece for my cousin, who passed away a couple of years ago. He died by suicide, and I kind of wrote it for him. How little there is to know of the body, that we would emerge from the water never complete new. There inside is a facsimile of older grief. They say the body inherits memory. Maybe it's just the newer pain learning to understand us through us. Trauma is the wire through the generation. We're not alone in this, I repeat, then inhale. Each new flush of air mapping out the parts of me that remain hidden. We are not alone in this. I have to tell myself that this too is a practice in faith. On the day the mortician will hold my heart in their hand, what do we call this? Not a commissioned part, some collapsed engine. What happened to the great well of ideas? All this imagination, every bit of touch that ignites still, where does it go? I want to believe that joy is inherited too. Wouldn't they want us to have this as well? Doesn't everyone you love deserve the entirety of you? One day I will be gone from here, and so did. So will you. I grieve for you already. But I believe grief is an honest gift. It's how you learn to hold the whole of a person. So much of loss is counted inside the absence. There's nothing missing in any of you. It's your fullness that overwhelms me. The rich and varied life of a person, all of its requisite pleasures and madnesses. One day, maybe, we'll learn how to live with it. Maybe we find a place that understands how to love us and our pain in equal measure. In there is a greater joy. I have to believe it is one equal to the weight of our living. Thank you.
Thank you. Very beautiful poem. Very beautiful. And to talk a little bit about that, because there's so much in there. You were saying, I believe before you read this, that beside this poem being also an homage and also about grief, it was also about your personal struggle with depression and where that came from. Is that what you were saying?
I think overall, that's the reason why I kind of obsess over the idea of grief, you know. And I think with this, I kind of need to feel like, you know, I mean, I'm kind of understanding, like, flipping history and just, you know, how many years under colonization, how much we've been under the kind of, like, you know, under the whims and, you know, kind of, yeah, kind of with these, like, other foreign powers, and to the point where our ability to self-determine has been compromised. And, you know, there's just this kind of simple need to feel like there has to be something more than the grief, you know. Just think about all this talk about trauma being passed down. You know, and just wanting to believe there's got to be something more than the grief that gets passed down, because through all these struggles, there are our ancestors who survived and resisted, you know, and that's right. Who lived and loved, and that's got to be passed down too.
Thank you, Jason. Yeah, that's so true and very powerful. And I wanted to ask you the last question, which is, what are you reading at the moment yourself?
Yeah, you know, reading a lot of manuscripts. I am, you know, because I do some reading, you know, for contests and things like that. But right now, I've been reading, Monica Stokes' The Nail the Evening Hangs On. It's great. Arya Bear, Hard Damage. You know, a classmate of mine just came out with a classmate of mine who was a classmate since like fifth grade. It's amazing. She came out with her first YA novel named Cynthia. Delisa, and just came out first YA novel. And, you know, I'm trying to get on that because it's kind of cool that this person who was a classmate of mine since I was, what, like 10 years old? Yeah. Like all the way through high school. Also came out with a book, so there's a lot I need to catch up on. You know, I've read the most I've ever read, I think, since Shelter in Place had begun. So, like, I've been reading a lot.
That's good to hear, Jason. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.